The Grand Hotel, Crystal Cage. The architect of the Grand Hotel, Crystal Cage, began, as do so many young architects, with grand designs. So grand they could not be built, calling for all the newest, most advanced construction materials, styles, and methods from all over the world. But all the ancient ones, too, attempting, it would seem, to challenge the wonders of the world with one of his own. The entire history and grammar of architecture were brought to bear upon each project, whether it be a municipal office building, a bridge, or an underground parking lot. There were references to Western classicism and Eastern mysticism, to hut building, skyscrapers and temples, to mathematical theorems and musical analogues, to the human body, the solar system, and natural forms, especially growing things like leaves and mushrooms, but also seashells, pebbles, eggs, and birds' nests, to cinematic architecture and opera and ballet stage design, to coiled springs, driftwood, fossils, angels, mud, and matchboxes. His designs were attacked as indecent but impotent assaults upon the body politic, or dismissed as naive, architectural scrapbooks, trivial and nonsensical. His first hotel design was labeled in the press Grandiose Hotel Hodgepodge. Later, his critics would take credit for his gradual transformation into one of the most important and influential of all grand hotel builders. But at the time, he was far too self-absorbed by his own artistic development to take notice of what people were saying about him. He rarely left his ill-lit basement workroom, where, unaware of the diurnal rhythms of others, he pored over his designs day and night, sleeping or eating, only as the need overtook him, and then but minimally. His whole being consumed by his ravenous sensibility and by his ambition, not for worldly success, but to break through to what lay beyond architecture, which he held to be at the heart of the human enterprise, autonomous and inclusive of all other fields of art, and contained by none. That very inclusivity, he came to realize, had somewhat misled him, for it was out of respect to it that he had tried to bring the whole of being into his designs. But now he was drawn, by way of the axiom that nothing can be excluded that has not been included, to its corollary. Only a form that includes everything can exclude everything. And so began the paring down process, which he thought of as an escape from the entrapment of the illusory all. Superfluous elements and ideas could be purged immediately. Beauty, for example, as an aesthetic idea, was irrelevant. Ornament was. Moral and social issues, such as functionality or durability or safety, out. The history of the world, insignificant. He had never thought about budgets. He did not do so now. Various materials fascinated him for a time until they, too, were rejected. Brick, stone, bone, wood, metals, glass. It was with glass that he paused. Glass suggested vision, a seeing through, and this from the outset was the task he had set himself. He began cautiously, operating on the well-known principle that one sees more through small windows than through large, designing monumental structures around small glass elements. It was about this time that his designs began to be accepted, and a few structures were built. He was acknowledged to be a talent to watch. He allowed himself to be dragged to the construction sites, but returned always vastly disappointed. enraged even, that his imagination was so paltry, its concretization in the world so compromised. For a time, he experimented with mirrors, lenses, screens, examining such properties of glass as reflection, distortion, magnification and minimization, the concentration and dispersion of light. He invented at least 17 new types of mirrors, able to reflect things not seen before or not seen whole, blurring the distinction between reflection and projection, in effect recreating the world, or rather providing the world with means to recreate itself. Using hand-blown bubble glass and some of these specially designed mirrors, he was able to bring the outside into the inside while transforming it utterly, turning it inside out, filling the walls with moving, breathing images which entered the structures through mirrored lenses smaller than pinheads. In an architectural journal, they called him the Magician of the Mirror. In this edifice, which is nominally a sales barn, one critic wrote, one finds tenderness, despair, poignancy, loneliness, withdrawal into the silent, mirrored, spectating self. Whereupon, in disgust, he abandoned mirrors and turned his attention entirely to the one property of glass that had first claimed it, its transparency. Gradually, the other elements fell away, and his buildings became entirely glass constructions, creating what is now known in the trade, much to his loathing, as see-through architecture. To accomplish this, he had to develop new forms of glass and new means of assembling it, thereby creating a flourishing new industry and vastly benefiting a society which he held not in low regard, but in no regard at all. He invented glass thin as a fingernail that could hold up 100-story buildings, glass soft and pliant like a curtain, glass one could put one's finger through without its breaking, and glass which could be passed through other glass, glass so fragile that a change of mood could shatter it, but which reconstituted itself when that change subsided. Glass that breathed, turning noxious fumes into pure air, and glass that converted cosmic rays into enough energy per unit to supply a city. Which led indirectly, others profited, he refused all patents, to the all-glass power plant and the fuel-free crystal automobile of today. By now, he was revered as a kind of national hero, and was in great demand as an architect, but though he was no doubt immensely wealthy, or could have been, he worked still in his dingy little basement studio, eating and sleeping as minimally as before, and did not know or care what was his or what was not. Even his own buildings held no interest for him. Once the drawings, so scribbled on as to become prized literary architects as well as major works of art, had left his cellar workroom. And it was at this time that he was commissioned to design a grand hotel, which he chose to call, or so they interpreted his grumbling response, the Grand Hotel Crystal Cage. By now, he developed glass so transparent that peering through it, to do this one had to be told where it was, invisible as it was to the naked eye, one saw not objects, people, streets or landscapes on the other side, but their inner truth and being. As his mirrors had enlarged upon what they reflected, this new ultra-transparent crystal absorbed what lay beyond it and distilled it to its essence. One not only saw through, one saw beyond. But the more the architect refined the glass, the less he saw on the other side. And he knew then that when he had perfected it, he would be staring out upon the void. He had set out upon a sacred quest for permanence and perfection, and alas, he had found it. In the only form, architecturally speaking, in which it could conceivably exist. And so, having escaped the prison of the All, he had trapped himself again, this time with its contrary, and this time there would be no escape. Perhaps that was what he was muttering about when his municipal patrons heard the words cage and crystal. And so, the Grand Hotel Crystal Cage was built. Presumably. Nobody knows really where it is, or even, therefore, if it is. It is listed in the guidebooks, where it is described loosely as the architect's final masterpiece, using the notes and drawings recovered from his basement workshop as the source for the scant details, but no address is given. He was an ambitious man. Many believe he enclosed the entire city inside the crystal cage, and that all its citizens are its occupants. There are those who claim to have had rare glimpses of the world emptied of all its furniture, glimpses that could only have been achieved by way of his glass. But none of these reports have been verified, repeated, or even located. More likely, the Grand Hotel Crystal Cage has but one tenant, and, notwithstanding its official classification, only room for one.